Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and our panel discussion for this Friday, the 27th of March. It is Friday. That feels
That's good.
That's
a good thing.
That feels right. And we're very happy to have you aboard this morning. Let me introduce the panel to you, and then we will, we have a lot to get to. There is so much. Even I had a longer than usual list last night, and then since then, I think we've added four or five things. So we have a lot to get to, and we'll try to get to as much as we possibly can. There's just a ton to talk about. Alan Chartok is with us, making up the panel. Good morning, Alan.
Hi, Joe.
Hello, sir. Associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain, is with us today.
Good morning.
Good morning. And SUNY Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter and just great person, Rosemary Armero.
Thank you. That's great.
Welcome.
My morning got better.
Welcome to the program. It's very nice to have you all here again. And roundtable at WAMC.org if you wish to join our little radio fun cavalcade. Roundtable at WAMC.org. At about 8 o'clock this morning, posted on his website, Harry Reid, Democrat of Nevada, announced that he is that he will not seek re-election to the Senate. The longtime lawmaker who has led Senate Democrats since 2005 said he had been contemplating retiring for months. He will step down at the end of 2016. Alan, what do you think?
Well, the question is, which canary has a smile on their faces? Obviously, Chuck Schumer is right at the top of the leadership. And so is Durbin from Illinois. And I have a feeling there's going to be a certain amount of duking it out between those two guys. But I wouldn't count Schumer out, even though he's technically, I think, third ranking in the Senate. And I am sure that there is an awful lot of behind the scenes scurrying around right now. You know, Joe and Rosemary and Mike, I often wonder how decisions are made. And I'm sure part of this is he was going to have a tough fight. They were after him with everything they had. Not only that, I'm sure he does a certain amount of polling. So maybe that's it. And maybe it's just time. I mean, it's not easy to be a senator, that's for sure.
How old is he?
75.
So, I mean, he's had a long, long career. He's accomplished as much as he probably is going to, considering the way Congress is set up right now. I think it's time. There are people in line who are qualified, as Alan points out, to take over for him. I think this is probably a good move.
Well, you know, on the other hand, when you say he's probably accomplished as much as he can, I suspect what's going to happen is that when Hillary runs, she may well bring the United States Senate back with her, and which would make him the leader again. Right now, he's in the minority. So I'm sure that was part of his thinking also.
Also, do you think there's just a point where you just say, look, I'm tired, and I just want to, and I really do.
I want to play with my grandkids.
Right.
I want to travel.
I just want to stay in Nevada. And,
yeah.
I want to spend more time with my family and pursue other interests.
Yes, which is a different statement when you're 33 and you just
abruptly leave, right?
Right, you just turn your office into a Downton Abbey shrine versus, you know, a guy who's been in office for decades and has put in a long career, and he's 75 years old.
Well, can another Democrat win his seat? I mean, he's kind of an anomaly
in Nevada,
blue state.
Yeah,
that's one more thing. It may change again the balance in Congress, in the Senate.
Think about it though, 75, and he, you know, maybe it was a life changing experience. He had an accident on a treadmill or something like that, where he injured himself, and you know, it makes it take pause. And he's 75. Does he have the energy it takes to head back into another contentious election? Because, you know, they'll be gunning for him, the Tea Party types.
Oh, without question.
Alan, what do you think it would mean for New York if Senator Schumer were to take over the leadership of the Senate, regardless of which party controls the Senate?
Well, it would be huge because, you know, they, both in the legislature and the Congress, they divvy up the spoils. And there's a certain amount of what we might want to call free money, which goes to the leaders to divvy up and to give out. And when you're the head, there's no question in my mind that you make out better than when you don't have the leader there, because it doesn't always work. But one of the ways that they assure perpetuity for these guys is to make sure that they're protected with money.
I would like to point out as a feminist that at the same age, 75, the leader of the Senate, Nancy Pelosi. The House of Representatives, had a great victory this week. She came out and in partnership with the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, the first real significant bipartisan piece of legislation we've seen in a long time, a fix to the Medicare bill. So she does have energy and strength. I'm not saying that women are stronger than men or anything like that, but
no.
there you go.
I think there's people who are ready to keep going and have it and aren't interested in stopping, and there's other people who just take pause to do the things that are completely legitimate, like you were talking about.
I do like when the timing of this announcement, though. It's like it comes early, it gives everybody time to get their ducks in a row. As you said, it'll be a contentious seat. To figure it out, and then you're also running the minority party with the idea, you know, with one eye to the door.
right, but it also, I mean, in a way, it's like President Obama being a lame duck.
Right.
He's now a lame duck, so it gives him license to do maybe what he really wants to do.
Absolutely.
And the courage to do what he might have not wanted to do before, or wanted to do but didn't politically couldn't afford to do. And it might, you know, we might see some interesting developments out of all that.
On the other hand, it might weaken him.
No.
Yeah.
Because you see, lame ducks are sometimes weak, and that's why they call them
lame. Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, Barack Obama has done well in that stage. He's
That's right.
more vigorous and bold in many ways than he was, you know, at the end of his last term.
I think history will look back very well on a Barack Obama and the way that he prosecuted his presidency, so to speak, and the way he dealt with the overwhelming effort to undermine him that began before he even was sworn in. And you know, how he's handling these last couple of years so far, he's probably had more influence than most recent presidents in the last 2 years of
exactly,
their terms.
Exactly, exactly. He did not accept the label of lame duck at all.
So Harry Reid has that option. He can maybe go out with a blazon.
He might have felt some freedom, Rosemary, that he didn't have before, and I think to some degree he could be faulted for that.
Yeah, do you mean Obama?
Obama, yeah, mm-hmm. He's terrific. I mean, you know, I think I think that they are that they've been after him from the very beginning. But I have a feeling after there was no re-election possible, that's when he took off the gloves.
Well, I mean, I always worry when I say something positive about Barack Obama because it turns into he's fabulous and wonderful. I don't think that either. And John Boehner and Nancy Pelosi are two people I think who get demonized and we play them down. And they have done something truly significant this week. And given more attention and support, might do more of that, which is bipartisan legislation that actually improves things for people in this country.
Yeah, but you know, as a self-described feminist, Rosemary, there are things in that bill that aren't very attractive, like the anti-abortion.
Of course.
Or the,
but
know,
that's what
stuff.
That's what government is, though, as we say here all the time. You give up some things you want, and the child health program is only extended for 2 years. Why not 4 years? What's the problem with that? But a bill has been passed. That's great.
Well, you know.
Now it has to go into the Senate, doesn't it?
Ah, yes.
Yeah. And you know. And, you know, Mussolini made the trains run on time. And, efficiency is not always, anything, as long as it got passed, is not really right. Think of all those women who, Rosemary, I don't want to get you angry here, but think of all those women who are going to be deprived of the right to control their own bodies. I think that's very serious stuff.
I think, Alan, that you are confusing in the same way that the Republicans do, that, yes, abortion is a huge issue and really important, but is it bigger than fixing really awful things with the Medicare that are now fixed, like paying doctors enough so they'll take Medicare patients? And so you give up in a small way in order to get something bigger. I think that's what the Democrats did in this case.
Well, also, in the definition that comes out of that bill, I really don't love fighting with you, Rosemary. You tend to win too much, but in the definition of the bill, there are some things that are that sound good, but I'm not so sure how good they are, like doctors practicing in a different way, you know, and their definitions of efficiency and things like that. I think that we're going to have to see how this thing works out.
But isn't it better to get some legislation and to make some traction and to move somewhere positive than not move at all and have the gridlock that we all complain about?
Okay, well, let me give you an absurd answer to that. Suppose, Joe, the price of passing something, as you just said, some legislation, had been basically gutting Medicare or gutting, or better yet, gutting Obamacare. Would that have been satisfactory just in order to get something?
I really have to object here.
Really?
Yes, there are things wrong with the bill, but this is a very good piece of much-needed legislation, and it might lead the way it was conducted, and if the Senate does go along and pass it, which I think they will, to future reforms, including fixing the tax code. There's important work to be done. We're never going to get a perfect piece of legislation, so it's far more than just getting any piece of legislation passed.
Well, Rosemary, I really do have to object to it. You just said, you mean to say that if the question is, where is the tipping point in each of these things? You think that the Republicans in the United States Congress are going to allow for a tax bill that is going to basically make the system fair without all those deductions for business and everything else that they've got, where a major corporation, one hangs around our area, pays nothing in taxes last year?
Well, in this bill, for example, they added billions to the national debt. I never thought they would do that. So, yes, I think both sides gave in a lot on this.
Mm. Yeah, and you had 33 Republicans did not back this, but he had the support of all but four Democrats. Boehner did. That could be the grounds for a new coalition, bipartisan coalition. And they didn't use anything in this bill to try to derail the Obamacare.
Right.
So and that's where they always would do something like that, especially a bill about Medicare. But so there is some sense that they're getting down to business and haggling and negotiating and doing what they are supposed to do to pass legislation.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk more, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after this.
Okay.
Support for WAMC comes from Steve Lewis Subaru, Hadley, Massachusetts, a new and used Subaru dealer serving the Pioneer Valley, Hartford, and Springfield, offering new Subarus plus used cars, trucks, and SUVs. SteveLewisSubaru.com. And Rethink Local and Go Local Hudson Valley, a program to help build a local living economy and promote our members, such as Two Alice's Coffee Lounge Newburgh and Cornwall on Hudson, and Drink More Good Beacon, rethinklocal.org.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel for this Friday morning. It is the 27th of March, and very nice to have you with us. Let us go to a couple of letters, and that should bring us to the bottom of the hour and get an update on the news, and then we will go into a lightning-fast bonus round to get to as many topics as we possibly can in the 30 minutes left of the program. Alan, go ahead.
Ryan says, I can't believe we are debating whether passing something is better than passing nothing when Republicans ignore what the American people want. They are elected to do what we want. We want them to pass legislation to fix the country. They aren't doing that. It's practically traitorous. So what are we debating? It's ridiculous. That's what he says. And Spencer says,
I don't understand that.
No, well, what don't you, which part?
Well, I mean, we elect a group to represent us. So so the Republicans are in charge right now. So they're representing their people. Democrats who have elected their representatives are representing their people. So they're hashing things out and they're passing legislation. So I don't know how that is traitorous.
Okay, so put it in a letter and send it to me, and I'll read it. No, I think that's. No, you make a point. Sure you do. Okay, and Spencer says, does Harry Reid leaving mean we're more likely to see actual progress on nuclear waste, Yucca Mountain, and in turn nuclear energy in this country? It's no secret that Reid has obstructed Yucca Mountain despite support from the local and technological scientific communities. Thanks again, and have a good weekend.
Good luck.
Dennis says, hi, all. I predict whether Hillary wins or not is that the Republicans will retain control of the Senate. Nevada will probably go Republican now. Allen predicted that the New York State Senate would go Democratic in 2014, and I told him, sadly, that he was wrong. Walker says, big Harry Reid. Harry Reid must have figured in timeline. It announces now it opens up the calendar for a good Democratic candidate, but he runs and wins and then has to resign. The governor of Nevada appoints a temporary senator. Read his memoir, The Good Fight. It's incredibly engaging and insightful into what this tough guy is made of. Rich says, new ideas, a fresh face is good. The days of long run in politics are over. Sam Rayburn would have quit under today's conditions and lived. And that's what I got so far.
All right. That is that gets us to where we need to be. A reminder, you can join our conversation roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We will continue our conversation and go to many other topics right after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Trattoria Rustica, Pittsfield, Massachusetts. Chef Davide Manzo, preparing Cucina Napoletana, serving 5 p.m. till closing, except Tuesday when closed. TrattoriaRustica.com. Haydenville Woodworking and Design, a group of artisans designing and building renovations, additions, new homes, custom cabinets, and furniture for over 30 years. HaydenvilleWD.com for virtual portfolio. And Saratoga Jewish Community Arts, in collaboration with departments at Skidmore Presents, Life in a Jar, the Irina Sendler Project, tonight and tomorrow at Skidmore's Filene Theater, 518-584-8730.
BBC News with David Austin. German prosecutors say Andreas Lubitz, the pilot thought to have deliberately crashed an airliner in the French Alps, appears to have hidden an illness from his employers. A sick note signing him off work on the day of the disaster was found torn up in his flat in Dusseldorf. No suicide note was found. Media reports in Germany suggest the 27-year-old had previously been receiving treatment for depression. Military prosecutors in Poland are charging two Russian air traffic controllers over a plane crash that killed the Polish president and 95 other people in 2010. The controllers were guiding President Lech Kaczynski's aircraft to land in western Russia when the plane crashed in bad weather. The Nigerian army says it's recaptured the northeastern town of Gwoza, believed to be the headquarters of Boko Haram. Gwoza was one of the last major towns held by the Islamist militants. The announcement comes on the eve of Nigeria's general elections, expected to be the most closely ever contested. Anti-smoking groups in Indonesia have threatened to take legal action against the country's social affairs minister, Kofifa Indar Parawansa, for distributing free packets of cigarettes to members of an indigenous tribe. Photos have circulated on the internet of Ms. Parawansa handing gifts, including cigarettes, to the Anak Dalam tribe in central Sumatra. A brother of Sri Lanka's President Maithripala Sirisena is in a critical condition after being attacked with an axe. Priyantha Sirisena, who's a businessman involved in sand mining, is being treated in hospital. Police are questioning a male suspect. And a court in Thailand has ruled against the release from custody of a group of Muslim Uyghurs who were at the centre of a diplomatic row between Turkey and China. The 17 Uyghurs who were found last year in southern Thailand say they're Turkish, but China wants the 17 handed over to them. That's the latest BBC News.
Support for WAMC comes from Elms College, Chicopee, Massachusetts. Working to educate students with their core values of faith, community, justice, and excellence, elms.edu. and Lennox Plastic Surgery and Skin Center of BMC, plastic reconstructive and hand surgery, and laser skin treatments by Dr. Rodrigo Santa Marina, BerkshireHealthSystems.org.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel for this morning. We enjoy your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Let us talk about some other issues that are in the news because we have a lot of topics to talk to. So the story that we just heard on the BBC was, of course, in regards to the German pilot apparently responsible for the crash of the plane in the French Alps earlier this week. Now it is said the co-pilot is said to have hidden an illness from his employer. Documents found in the home of Andreas Lubitz, who is believed to have deliberately crashed a Germanwings jet on Tuesday, included a torn-up doctor's note allowing him time off from work. We do not know the nature of the illness, but we do know that apparently he had been hiding a medical condition from his employer, which, of course, is Germanwings, a division of Lufthansa, which this all is according to prosecutors in Dusseldorf, Germany. We said yesterday on this program that 24 hours from the initial announcement that the plane was deliberately crashed, that we probably know a lot more about Andreas Lubitz, and we certainly do know more, a little more anyway, and this is a huge piece to a puzzle that still needs a lot more pieces to solve.
So how would, if somebody is seriously depressed and is hiding it from people, How are we capable, especially when they're in sensitive jobs like this, how are we capable of finding that out and putting a halt to what they're doing? We got a letter, guys, with new speculation and information that the young pilot might have been depressed and obviously suicidal, and it is a sad tragedy. But maybe this will help proliferate a wider and better communication on the subject. I have struggled with depression and all the ill sides effect for most of my life, 27 years. And I believe many people, young and old, that suffer also. But it's such a taboo subject to talk about, and to be labeled as such, there's a lot of ignorance on the subject. Hopefully this incident will not mar those of us that are diagnosed with depression as bad, crazy, dangerous people.
Well,
obviously, I could go on, but I'll keep it short.
I understand the note, and I think they're absolutely right. I don't know that we are in a position yet to know that he was depressed or if he was suicidal.
We do know that it was a flesh and blood error, as Rachel Maddow put it last night, that led to this crash. And while rare, they're not unheard of. She looked at it like a 20-year history of plane crashes. There have been like 24 incidents, most of them small planes, where only one person or a few people at a time are killed. But 24 pilots have done this. The problem is that there's no easy technological fix for this. Are you going to psychologically examine everybody who flies a plane on the day they're flying? You just cannot really do it. It's not an easy fix like locking the cockpit door,
right,
which stopped hijackings from among passengers. I think our letter writer is right. This is a long-term relook and relearning about mental illness. And there are increasing calls for paying more attention to suicide. We saw that at the Academy Awards this year.
Right.
Well, you know, it brings up a sensitive topic that, we're trying to, many people are trying, through laws to make people with a history of mental illness not be able to get their hands on firearms. I mean, if you can't do it for someone in such a sensitive job where they have extraordinary testing to make sure that somebody is physically and mentally able, which an airline pilot does go through, how can we expect society to do that for people to get gun permits, to get permits to, drive cars, run heavy machinery? I mean, it just seems like an impossible challenge to be sure that somebody under certain conditions sometime in the future might not have a mental breakdown.
Mm-hmm. Well, you make a very good point. We have seen after the gun incidents, each of them, people calling for nobody being allowed to have a firearm, who has a mental illness. And then somebody's got to make that diagnosis, and then somebody's got to be deprived of certain rights that we have. We just saw, and I know that Joe's intending to talk about this given time, a guy pulled out of a car and beaten up by a police officer, terribly beaten up and disgracefully.
Yes.
And the question then becomes, is this somebody who we is this a police officer but a mentally ill police officer?
Yeah.
It runs the spectrum.
Yeah, that's a shocking story. We have so much, it's hard to get to that today, but they pull a retired auto worker out of his car, black man pulled out by white officers, put him in a chokehold on the ground, punch him 17 times in the head. It's the worst video I've seen since Rodney King.
It is it's a horrible. Actually, let's just wrap this up, and then we. And
sorry.
Then we, and then we, no, not at all. And then we can talk about it. One thing I just want to point out about the Lubit story is that Germany's Federal Aviation Office said on Friday that a medical certificate issued to Mr. Lubitz allowed him to fly. So said he was safe to fly, but noted that he did have a medical condition, although it did not specify whether it was related to a psychological issue. So just to add a little clarity to
what does seem to be true is what the prosecutor said. This was a deliberate act, but it does not appear to be an act of terrorism.
Right.
Well, it's all with the definition of terrorism. It hasn't been to intimidate people or to engage in violence for a political cause. At least nothing indicates
right,
that now.
Nothing
right.
Nothing indicates.
Yeah. But murder.
Murder. It's
yeah,
different.
The murder. Yeah.
It's different. Yeah.
Let's go to this other story, which is this horrendous beating, and I guess that I'm. This is over a fairly, from my understanding, at least of what I've seen, is a fairly routine traffic stop, right?
Yeah, it's not even clear why he was stopped. He
right.
was a black man in a big Cadillac in a bad section of town.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like it was profiling.
And we're going to this is in Detroit,
right?
Detroit man, a longtime auto worker with no criminal history, described how police officers dragged him from his car one night in January, choked him, beat him, and tasered him during a traffic stop that was caught on patrol car video. We should note that this incident happened
January 28th.
Yes, yeah. In January.
Just to be clear, he's still alive.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. And
four days in the hospital.
The video, there was a lot of video, but no audio.
Right.
But the video shows that police were pursuing him with the light on, and he didn't lower his speed. He didn't pull away. And then finally, after a period, he did pull over, and he said he was unaware that they were following him. He saw that, and he just kept going his way. And it doesn't show him accelerating or going away. Mm-hmm. But when they got the video shows the police getting to the car after it stopped and pulling bring him out, they said he didn't reveal both of his hands. One hand was low, and they thought he might have had a weapon.
Yeah, that's what they always
say. And they accused him of saying something like, I'm going to kill you,
exactly,
or something.
Which he denies.
Well, and there's no audio.
And the only charges against him, now, that's interesting too, are the resisting arrest kind of charges that the judge immediately dismissed, and cocaine in the car, even though there's no cocaine in his blood, and he says it was planted, and the officer involved has a history, although no convictions of planting evidence before. It's just a terrible
case.
Well,
it just underscores the distrust that the public has when a person is stopped and beaten by police, or sometimes worse, and it's basically what they say against what the victim says or the witnesses say, and usually the police are exonerated.
Why didn't we know about this in January?
Good question. It's probably reported, if at all, in Detroit, and we don't read Detroit papers in Albany.
Well, it just got to court, and the judge threw the case out, by the way. You know,
he left the drug charges.
Oh, the drug charges.
He's still facing those.
Right, but all the other traffic
charges. Why didn't we know? Because that's a very good question. There was criticism about Ferguson, that did not become a national story until people took to the streets.
Well, for a good reason, and that is because he wasn't dead.
The guy in Detroit.
Yeah, but with that video, I mean, it would seem to me that if you're the man who was on the ground being beaten, that with that video, of once that's released, that you release that yourself.
Okay, well, that may be the answer. The video is from the police. They're not going to release it.
No.
So up until now, it comes out in court. Until we're in court, you've got a black man in Detroit saying the cops were beating him, which would have gotten no credibility at all. Ferguson has upped that. Then you're having a defense attorney who's pretty smart. He releases it now after Ferguson and other related events, and it's national news. And a lot of sympathy for this guy, and he sure deserves it.
And he's credible. I mean,
yeah,
he really
totally
looks credible.
Yeah, he is.
Which helps.
Once again, the wisdom of having police officers wear, cameras with audio on them, because this would easily be cleared up. And then the other
pilots
thing
too.
Yeah.
we have audio.
This is the other disturbing thing about, you know, finding a gun on the person who could be described as the victim. In other words, there is a history of policemen carrying guns just so in case something like this happens, you know, the gun gets dropped into the crime scene, or the cocaine gets dropped into the crime scene. This is pretty terrifying stuff, especially if you're driving around with black skin.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you look at this story, and I'm just struck by what Mike and Rosemary are saying. You talk about this being credible. So now he has a press conference yesterday, and he comes out and he tells the story, and it is so compelling with him telling the story, and then this just horrendous
And this is
video.
a guy who worked for Ford for 37 years, who was retired. He had no criminal record at all, no arrest record or anything, and no cocaine in his system, which if he was using cocaine even months ago would still have traces. Mm-hmm. I mean, he looks credible, and it doesn't look good for the police.
Well, we will we'll certainly be following the story, I'm sure, more over the next several weeks, days and weeks. Let us take a break. We'll come back and finish up with stories and find out what else is happening in the world. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Clear Yoga in Rhinebeck, an Iyengar yoga practice offering the workshop Understanding the Inverted Poses with Matt Dreyfus this Saturday, 2 to 4:30 p.m., clearyogarhinebeck.com. And Smith College Museum of Art, featuring redesigned galleries with updated themes, spaces, and interpretations, smith.edu/artmuseum.
Good morning and welcome back to the Roundtable and to our discussion this morning. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan, give us a couple letters and then we'll go into the lightning round and get to a couple topics here. Before
a couple of things on the letters that I think we ought to say, Joe. One is that we don't always get to every letter. We try, but we don't get to every letter because
check.
It would be impossible. And then secondly, if you're going to write in, would you please try to substantiate your facts? You know, it's just not okay to make an accusation if it isn't proven, because, you know, it's dangerous stuff and we don't want to do that. Okay, let's go to John, who says, I disagree that police officers should have body-mounted cameras. I think we are the ones that should have the cameras in our cars, our pockets, homes, workplaces. I don't trust the cops with cameras, says John. Okay, and then Tom says, there's a video, and I really have some, maybe you guys know more than I do about this. There's a video of the cop planting the drugs. Just another cop being a cop, doing cop stuff. You know how serving and protecting, you know, serving and protecting the public. Did anybody else hear of the video showing?
That hasn't been asserted. That no one is making that claim. They're just suspicious that he may have planted it.
No. There is a video.
It was on
Chris Hayes last night, and it does show the officer who
pulling
a white bag like thing out of his pocket. Yeah.
Wow. Whoops. Yeah, I didn't see
it's
that.
It's not conclusive, but it's definitely out there, and it does support the defense.
That's good. I'm glad you mentioned that, Rosemary. I think we need to be very, very careful in something like this. One needs to think, says Joe, of the proportionality of the problem. Though there is no national tracking system of murder-suicides in the United States, medical studies in the phenomenon estimated between 1,000 to 1,500 deaths per year in the U.S., with the majority occurring between spouses or intimate partners and the vast majority of the perpetrators being male. Depression, marital or financial problems, and other problems are generally motivators. One needs to ask how many drunk mothers and accidents caused by people taking antihistamines kill many more people than the isolated cases of mental illness. That's from Joe. And Joshua says, I don't know what Joshua says. Okay. Don't know there. Okay. Bonnie says, within 24 hours, the paparazzi will track her down, I predict. Who's that?
I don't know. No.
Probably the girlfriend of the pilot, I'll bet. They're just speculating, you know,
okay.
Or something.
And R says, despite the bipartisan legislation, history will very well remember Tea Party Republicans in the same unfavorable light as the Dixiecrats, he says. And that, I believe, is it.
All right.
So, you see anything else?
Nope. I think we're up to date. Let's move on to a couple of other issues. There was a New York City building collapse yesterday.
Wow.
That was really a horrific thing to watch. Certainly, it was all over the 24-hour cable news networks yesterday. An apartment building collapsed in a fiery burst of rubble on Thursday, and flames spread to nearby buildings in what officials said appeared to be a gas-related explosion, injuring at least a dozen people and scattering debris across surrounding streets in the heart of Manhattan's trendy East Village. Mayor Bill de Blasio said the blast appeared to have been caused by plumbing and gas work inside one building. Inspectors from utility Con Edison had been there to check on a planned gas meter installation about an hour before the fire, but they decided the building wasn't ready for gas to be introduced, according to company president Craig Ivey.
Yeah, it was interesting. I have a performer friend who lives a half block away, and yesterday my phone just exploded. There were a message from her, all in capital letters: a building just fell down. So it was a catastrophic. There are all these fire engines down there, and a second building may collapse today. It's in danger, and it's not the first time we've seen infrastructure problems in the older housing stock of New York City. Not the only place where that's happening either.
That's right. Yeah, it reminded me when I saw the footage of the fire 2-3 weeks ago in Schenectady that left 40 people homeless,
right.
And some people dead too, and at least one person is unaccounted for in this New York City fire, and it's sort of the hazards of urban living and old infrastructure, because that often gas leaks are the result of that. We don't know in this case, but it is.
But we have certainly had them upstate too,
right?
And people just. It's one of the modern hazards and one of the modern hazards of what we all face. It's, you know, a lot of people, I switched from oil to gas last year. And don't think this kind of thing didn't go through my head. Mm-hmm.
Let's move on to another story and try to get in, again, as many as we can here toward the end. But Egypt said Thursday that it was prepared to send troops into Yemen as part of a Saudi-led campaign against the Iranian-backed Houthi movement. Is it Houthi?
I think so.
Houthi. Because I've heard it now pronounced
Houthi.
Way.
Houthi and Houthi.
And yeah. Houthi.
Because of that.
Yes. I've heard both, yeah.
And I even heard Houthi the other day on Reuters.
We vote against that one.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you. I'm glad we're all in agreement there.
And the Speaker of the Assembly is spelled Hasty, but it's actually Hasty.
Yes.
In
so
York
it's
assembly,
difficult yeah. to
is he Yemenis?
Get on.
No.
All right. So this is signaling the possibility of a protracted ground war on the tip of the Arabian Peninsula. I yield to Rosemary.
Well, it's more proof that we're getting closer and closer to our regional conflagration. And the real players here are Saudi Arabia and Iran. And the United States has this completely split personality here. We're fighting for Iran on one side and for Saudis on the other. It's very, very bizarre and complicated.
Alan.
And the Egyptians are coming in big time. Now they're saying they might have to introduce ground forces. The Egyptians, of course, are the number one or two recipients of American foreign aid, and clearly part of what we are, of our approach to the Middle East. Folks, I hate to say this, but you all remember World War I, and these things can grow out of hand. No two ways about it. So I'm not saying that we're facing that right now, but this is pretty scary stuff.
I think you're right, Alan. I think the United States, that's why we're on two sides at the same time. What we want is stability there. We don't really, have to, in a way, we don't care who wins.
Right.
We want the ports open for oil and stability in that area. And it's getting increasingly hard to bring that about.
Now, Rosemary, what makes you think we don't care? I think we do care. I think that basically, you know, the Saudis and the Egyptians are our partners over there, and the Iranians are not. And now just look at this way. Iran is not incapable of fighting wars. We saw that with Iraq, and it was devastation. So can you imagine if the Egyptians go in and the Iranians go in, which, by the way, they're subtly talking about doing? That could really make it something.
Here's why I think it. Egypt has been our ally in the past, but 2 years ago and 2.5 years ago in the Arab Spring, we lost the dictator who was our real ally. And whether the new guy and the new administration is our ally remains to be seen. We're not close. And the same with Saudi. The House of Saud is in transition, and it's in a lot of danger, probably in more danger than Egypt was a few years ago.
That's why they're doing it.
And so we are looking for the future. Iran is very, very strong and could well come out ahead of this. And our real ally in the area, of course, is Israel. So who do we defend to help Israel? That remains unclear to me, too.
Well, not to me. I mean, I think it's pretty clear as to who the United States thinks their, quote, friends are here. And I think the Saudis, the Egyptians, and by the way, I don't think there's any real difference between, from everything I'm reading, between al-Sisi, the present head, and Mubarak, who left. I think they all came out of the same cloth and the same machine. But we are negotiating. I think your point is well taken, that we are negotiating with the Iranians right now, and certainly this kind of thing gets in the way of that.
And finally, we end on British culture news, and of course, I mean, just the whole there was the BBC flap of the host and losing the job, right? That was the big the big story this week. The guy from One Direction leaves, and now this Downton Abbey closing up shop.
They're filming the final season of Downton Abbey, and that'll be the end.
Yes,
there'll be a lot of people going into clinical depression about this.
Yes, it will. It will air. It will air in the spring, in I guess summer, spring and summer in England. It will air here in January of 2016, and then that will be the final season of Downton Abbey.
I think Mike has some good ideas for the ending.
Oh, right. We'd like to see them take it very quickly, right up through contemporary time, and have an elderly Mary Crawley living on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and just to see how it all plays out, and to see how when they come to the U.S., how they handle things and how they make their money and get into U.S. politics and all that. So.
But for the good news is that they're thinking about making a movie out of this now.
Of course.
And for those of us who have never, ever, ever seen 1 minute of Downton Abbey, that would be the perfect solution.
Which I don't understand, because you said you saw the show that goes directly after it.
Yeah, because I saw it on, I get on the bike at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, so if you got on the bike at 4, you would have seen that.
And they play the detective story on WMHT.
Yeah.
At 5 o'clock in the morning.
Well, you're missing something. It's a great show.
You can binge watch it. Yeah.
I know,
yeah.
But I got to get my sleep.
Says the man who gets up at 3 o'clock in the morning.
No, 2:30.
It says the man who gets up at 2:30 in the morning. All right, we are out of time. Thanks to everybody. We got to everything. That's great. Mike Spain, thank you very much for filling in today. I appreciate that.
Glad to be here.
Rosemary, have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you,
Alan. Have a great weekend as well. Good to see you. See you Monday, and we'll be back with more roundtable after this.